UpToDate wants to know what you're talking about with family and friends. You can text UTD to 816-601-4777 to tell us. Again, 816-601-4777.
This is UpToDate on KCUR 89.3, and I am Danny Alexander, sitting in for Steve Kraske. Prospero's books and media has a character all its own, from the brick building it occupies with wooden floors and tin ceilings to the bookshelves that fill the space between the two. Prospero's offers 50,000 titles in books, vinyl, CDs, and film. The store occupies the corner of 39th and Bell, and the idea for it, and I'm quoting here, was birthed on a bar stool less than 50 feet from its front door. With me now to tell that story, the owners of Prospero's, Will Latham, and I'm saying that correctly?
Latham.
And Tom Wayne. Gentlemen, good to have you with us, and congratulations on 25 years. I mean, UpToDate just made it to 20. You guys are beating us here really well.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's start off with that origin story, Will. Why that location?
Well, we were eating pizza. And we needed a beer afterwards.
Uh-huh.
A buddy of mine were sitting around having a conversation. We were both in politics going, man, we can't stand doing this. Let's do something else.
And I'm surprised.
Yeah. And it was a joke comment about, well, let's open a bookstore. And the rest of the afternoon goes away. And I go up to Iowa for a couple of weeks. And I come home and my buddy goes, well, I did something. I go, what did you do? And there's 5,600 books in our in the apartment we shared in boxes. So now we got to do this.
He bought the books first?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you have to have a location.
Yep.
How did that come about?
We looked at various parts of the city we loved. We were both Midtown guys, and we went and found five places we thought were great, and we divvied up different hours and days, and we literally had a scratch pad, and we stood outside each place for an hour at different times of the days and ticked off people walking by.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was our market research. And
pretty
we ended
good.
Up, we ended up on 39th, which was one of the best moves anybody I can think would make. So
what in your background prepared you for opening a bookstore, Tom?
Well, the gentleman that Will was talking about is, his name was John for purposes of our discussion, but
for purposes of his parents calling him that too.
Yeah. I had moved into the house the week that the bookstore opened, and I walked in there, and Will and I went to the same high school, even though we didn't know each other. We were a few years apart. But so I was there almost from day one, and I did some building some shelves and went and got books and at garage sales and brought them back for trade. And John, after about 15 months, you know, for reasons that are kind of a long discussion, just kind of dropped the keys and left. And Will had a day job that politics job that was fingernails on a blackboard to him. And so I did, you know, we just had a handshake sweat equity agreement along with another guy who ultimately left. But I did days, he did nights, and
so let me get this straight. This is your long way of telling us that there was nothing in your background that prepared you to run a bookstore.
Well, you know, of course I was a reader. You know, I used to hide from my dad sometimes, who wanted me to do yard work. I'd go up in the attic and read a book. But
had a love of books, so that's a big help.
Yeah, and so, you know, there was that. And and at the time I wasn't doing anything. I had kind of you could say I kind of dropped out of big boy society and wasn't really doing much. And
so you were saved.
Yeah. And I had moved in. My girlfriend at the time bought a house down the street, and we, who I'm still with after 3,000 years, I mean 30 years. And
God bless her.
Yeah, so I and my brother owned a building down the street, so I knew the neighborhood really well. And like I said, I walked in the week they opened and was, you know, more than pleasantly surprised. It's like, wow, this is down the street. I don't even have to get my car to go to a bookstore. So.
Or work. So Will, what condition was the building in when you moved in?
Well, it was a barber shop for a long time.
Yeah, Vern, it had a couple of former lives.
Vern was, yeah. was a classic barber shop, but it had atrophied a bit, and the new landlord was a guy named Damon Abnos, who is just really good in the community of finding owner-used properties in odd places and then finding the right people to move in. And so we got the keys, and we had about 40 days because we wanted to open on a specific date, which was just this, the anniversary was this last weekend. And I mean, we drafted parents, we drafted friends, we were there late at night, you know, 20-hour days, turning it from a barbershop into a bookstore. And Tom tells us he got there before we opened because we still had paper, and he walked in, and I don't remember what he said, but my original partner looks at me and goes, "Can you build a bookshelf?" Tom was like working on the bookshelves before we got open.
So. Oh my goodness gracious. So you wanted to, as I understand it, you wanted a bookstore with a similar vibe to the famous Shakespeare and Company bookstore in Paris. What was so attractive about that?
I mean, the artists, the art. I mean, books contain some of the greatest ideas and some of the worst ideas that mankind has been able to put together. And
women, too.
Women, right. Yeah, that's correct. Womankind as well. And Shakespeare and Company was a special place. The moderns came out of there. I mean, again, Hemingway, Fitzgerald, Picasso, Apollinaire, Gertrude Stein. It was a who's who of people who hung around in a little small plot and supported each other and encouraged each other and goaded each other into writing and painting. And that was something I really cared about because I've been writing a long time. And I wanted to be open on that date. That was the drop-dead date. We had to be open because we wanted some of her juju.
Oh, okay.
I think we got it.
I would think you have, too. So the 5,600, did you say, books?
5,600 in boxes in our house.
Okay. So if I'm understanding correctly, though, you are mostly a used book?
Oh, everything's used.
Yeah, well, we have a few new release stuff from our customers who also do Shakespeare. We have a lot of people who write and paint and make music, and we carry new stuff from our customers who happen to be regional artists.
And so you've got a mixture of new and old. And do you have, like, collectible?
We do. It's when Spivey stepped away from antiquarian book dealing a few years back, we're last place standing. Our collection has grown. It was hard to compete with those guys because they were good. Tom Shaver and Spivey dealt with the antiquarian stuff, and we were still learning, but since those guys their stores have closed and they've moved on to other things, we've had a lot more influx, and it's kind of, it's a natural outgrowth. It just takes a while to get into doing that kind of work, but we do carry.
So, Tom, how familiar are you with the process that it took to build up to 50,000 titles?
Well, when we were across the street in the original location, I mean, they opened with the 5,600. By the time we left in mid-02, we were up to about 20,000. And that was just a slow process of, you know, most of our inventory walks in the door. People bring it in.
I was going to ask you how you accumulate the books.
If you bring in a book that we put $10 on, we give you half that in trade, and we'll give you a little half of that in cash, and it's their choice, and we put the trade on a file, and you can use it whenever. In fact, we use an old 3x5 card in a card catalog like thing, and
it's very analog.
So that's really what happens. I mean, we do go out and look at, you know, collections of books. That's easier to see 1,000 books on shelves than if they bring them in boxes. But we encourage that, and that's how we get everything, really.
And that's how you've managed to maintain the inventory since then.
Well, that and the fact that nobody else in town does trade. And that didn't used to be the case. I mean, when we opened in 97, there was 30 bookstores in Kansas City. There was 6 to 9 like ours. And today, there's a dozen bookstores in town.
Right.
I mean, and 5 of those are Barnes & Noble, 4 of them are Half Price. Then there's Rainy Day, locally owned, which is new. But of those 6 to 9, we're the only one left for a variety of reasons. But because of that, and the fact that if you're a reader, you know, you can bring in an armload of books and walk out with half an armload. And you can't do that anywhere else in Kansas City.
Oh, that's true. I'm Dana Alexander, and this is Up to Date. I'm talking with the owners of Prospero's Books and Media, celebrating 25 years in business. Will, you've been known for throwing myriad events over the years. What are some of the ones that stand out to you as the ones you love to look back on?
Wow. It's been great. We've had well over 2,500 events.
You want me to throw a couple
years
at you and you can
tell
me?
Well, no, I can remember them all. It's most of them. We used to do a monthly poetry reading called The Pit, and that was back before people really did stuff like that. And it'd get to be 80 people in there, and it'd go all night long. It was a great thing. I'm going to let Tom talk about one he did. We did a challenge on the world record for the longest continual poetry reading. And we had over 200, I think it was 219 poets come in from 19 states, and we went on for over 5 days nonstop. And that was everybody had 20, 30-minute slots, and it was broadcast by the tech of the day on internet, and people were tuning in from all over the world and flipping us stuff from bars in Arizona.
That was in spring of 2010.
Yeah.
Do you know if you still hold the record?
Somebody, I think, said they broke it, but it was with five people, and they would read for hours at a time. And, I mean, nothing's It was up in Minnesota, and you got nothing else to do when it's cold in Minnesota, I suppose.
What do you do in the winters in Minnesota?
Exactly. One of the most important ones we did, and gratifying, and really started an interesting conversation that continues today, was I'll let Tom talk about that one.
Well, and that's the book burning, right?
Yeah, that was on Memorial Day of 07. And we'd kind of had, I helped run the bookstore for 2 years before I even threw a book away. It's just something you're brought up to not do, and you don't think about doing it. But you get a book, maybe you have a few copies, maybe it's ratty. And it hit me one day, I was going to throw it away because I dragged books to thrift stores, and that became time consuming. And, I was like, we should just have a book burning, a satirical statement on a society that doesn't really appreciate the word. But it was just a flip thought, and, that was early on. And when we moved across the street, we bought the inventory from Billy Miller, which was in Mission, and we went through all their books, and we put a bunch of them in a storage unit. And a friend of mine who had a warehouse gave me some free storage space, and I literally forgot about those books for a few years. And then somebody wanted the space next to theirs, which was mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you need to get these out of here. And I'm like, well, we're just going to go ahead and do the book burning. So we had 20,000 books, which is, to give you an idea of the, our store right now has 50, but the 20,000 is, it's like 5 feet high, 5 feet wide, and 20 feet long, solid books. It takes three guys half a day to move those.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured if we got, and this was in 07, so it was kind of old media plus the internet. It was pre-social media. And we figured if we got what we call big boy media, that somebody would come and take these books. An inner city school district, small town library, prison system, because they were decent shape and they were okay. And we did it in a big, ornate, round, heavy metal cauldron outside of the bookstore that was shaped, like a grill.
But now, I'm going to interrupt you. Did you have to get a permit to do this?
Well, you're supposed to, but we didn't.
Oh, you rebel.
Yeah, so we just figured.
We didn't really know about it.
How different is it from a barbecue? I mean, it was clearly a highly symbolic act. We did have to practice, though, because you can't just stick a match on a book and have it work. And a funny part of that is Will's kid threw a book in the practice fire, so the kid burned a book before he read one.
And, oops.
yeah. I forgot that.
But if you were an editor at CNN and this footage landed on your desk and you had a dead news day, you'd run it because you run pictures of grills anyway. And my brother, who's a cinematographer, got some real good footage together, and it got on CNN's desk. And they ran it every other hour for like 2 days. And at one point, I found myself between Lindsay Lohan and George Bush. And
there you go. Claim to fame.
I personally got a chuckle out of that.
I would have, too. It did. And I remember it because I remember the coverage on that, too. It did make a statement. We just have a minute left here. I wanted to ask about your regulars because they have stuck with you.
Yep.
And really quickly, what happened during the pandemic? I mean, did you find a way to keep getting books out, or did you have to just really quickly give me the idea of how that
went? We really have the greatest customers that you can think of anywhere on the planet, and they did stick with us during COVID. And the day the mayor shut down the city, we started posting books online And people would go, "Do you have the?" They'd get a ping. "Do you have this book?" And it's like, "No." And then you'd spend 20 minutes finding books you had in the on the shelves that were kind of like that. And you'd tell them, they go, "I take these three." And so you'd desanitize them, put them in a bag, set them outdoors, and people would drive with their name on it, and they drive up and get their bag of books and Venmo you money. And
Oh, good deal.
I mean, we had an Uber driver we used to a couple teachers had raised some money for their students that were at home, and they'd buy care packages every other week, and that Uber driver would drive those books over and drop them off on porches and stuff.
It's just hard to picture that space, though, without people, you know, stopping, picking up a book, dropping in a chair, and read. It's just hard to picture. It must have been like, well, it was kind of like that here, too.
When Tom loved it, he got to do all of the deferred maintenance we'd been putting off for 10 years.
Oh, I had a bunch of little bitty construction projects. I threw my saw up on the main table, and it was kind of a nice vacation in a way.
Well, yeah, a lot of people had that, too. They were doing it yourself. So very quickly, what's up for the next 25 years?
We're going to keep selling books, I think.
I think there's a lot of people that are happy to hear that.
Yeah.
I've been talking with the owners of Prospero's Bookstore. I want to thank them both, Tom and Will, for being with us today.
Thank you, Dan.
And best of luck with the future.
All right. Thank you.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.